I'm Dana Lloyd. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast, where you will be inspired and empowered to connect more deeply with your authentic self as we explore topics of personal development, leadership, and spirituality. Your journey to your most authentic self starts right now. Have you always wanted your own personal coach? Well, now you can have one. Sign up for my weekly newsletter called Coach in Your Inbox, where I give you an inspirational message along with a coaching question for the week. Plus, you'll always be up to date with who is on the podcast and get my latest book recommendation. I value my relationships and community with others. So let's start a relationship. Go to danalloydleadership.com to sign up. My friend Ronnie Davis is back to talk about the seven things you should know if you are set on or considering losing weight again. She has gone from being an award-winning athlete, personal weight loss trainer, and chronic dieter to helping women find a new path to healthy eating and loving themselves. And she is good at it, as you will see in this episode. She busts myths and provides warm encouragement, all the while asking you to become present, connected, curious, and intentional in your life. Let's dive in. Ronnie Davis, welcome back to Soul Sister Conversations.
Hi, Dana. I'm excited to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm always delighted to have a conversation with you because we always have such good chats because we often chat, you know, through text or a Zoom call. And so I'm always happy to record with you because you have great information around weight loss, or maybe not weight loss, which we'll be really talking about. Because here we are in January, and in January, there's always this idea of a new year, new you. And of course, what's the one thing that's always on people's minds in January? It's often we consider weight loss because we've just come off of this very indulgent holiday. And that's a very typical thing in January, right? You posted something the other day on Twitter, which you share with me, and it says seven things you need to know if you are set on losing weight again.
And you know, when we talk about weight loss, I the other day I kind of joked that I'm an anti-weight loss, weight loss expert, because I spent about 30 years dieting myself, and I sold weight loss professionally for over 8 years. And all of that taught me a whole lot. And so I broke a lot of what I learned down into this tweet that I shared that you mentioned, the seven things that you need to know if you set or are considering weight loss resolutions again. Because as you said, this is the time of year that everybody's doing it. And
just give a little bit of a highlight for, so you've been on my podcast before in episode 103 and 148. Last year, we talked about getting out of your own way. But in 103, you really do a deep dive into your story. So if anybody's interested in that, I suggest they go back and listen to that one. But kind of give us a quick synopsis, because you said you've been a dieter for, and, you know, weight loss for decades, but you're also like a national fitness athlete. Like, you've done all the really extreme things with your body.
Yeah, I've kind of been there, done it all. You know, I started dieting, I think I was probably around 14 or so, and predictably gained weight on my first diet attempt. And my first diet attempt, you know, I credit that first diet attempt at 14 to starting my disordered relationship with food and disordered eating for decades. And then that disordered eating that started at 14 ultimately became bulimia in my early 30s when I started my, quote, fitness journey. You know, clean eating sent me right over the edge into full-blown bulimia. And during that time, you know, my 30s was kind of the decade of that fitness journey. And yeah, I became the, you know, an award-winning personal trainer and nutrition and wellness coach. And I was a champion, you know, nationally qualified champion figure athlete. And, you know, so I kind of have done it all. In terms of, you know, but prior to that, I had spent from 14 to, you know, my early 30s gaining and gaining and gaining and trying to lose and never really being successful. Wasn't until like my early 30s that I was actually finally, quote, successful losing weight, and ended up becoming the trainer and the nutrition and wellness coach and all of that. And, you know, it's interesting because that sort of decade that I was in that world, I always considered myself a weight loss success because I had lost the weight that I wanted to lose. And I became, you know, the athlete and everything else with the trophies and whatever. And I kept it off, or at least seemingly kept the weight off for that entire decade. And so on the surface, you know, from the outside, I look like this, you know, raging weight loss success story. But the reality is, like, now that I look back, now that I'm out of that world and I kind of look back on it, I didn't really ever keep the weight off. All I did was every spring, every winter, like September-ish, I would start putting weight on, and I would put, you know, 20 pounds or so on from September to March. Then in March, I would have to start taking that 20 pounds back off again so that I'd be able to have that perfect summer body in the summer. So on the outside, it looked like I was keeping the weight off, and I was believing I was keeping the weight off because it seemed completely normal to me to just diet again in the spring. Like I didn't even recognize that, wait a second, like the fact that I keep dieting is why I keep having to diet. You know what I mean?
Right. The yo-yo act. Yeah. And one of the things you just said, you said clean eating sent me right over the edge. And clean eating is one of these tricky words that people will often say. And I've been guilty of it too, because I, you know, you follow these people that are health people and they use the word clean. And I've not really, until I met people like yourself, I never really thought about the language around that and how damaging it can be. So can you address what you mean by clean eating and how did that drive you over the edge?
Well, typically, I mean, and that's the problem with clean eating too, right? Because there isn't a specific set definition. Like, it's a made up term that doesn't really have meaning, except in the sense that people use it to sell their either weight loss plans or their health plans or whatever else. But typically in the clean, quote, clean eating world, you know, we're talking about only eating natural foods. That, you know, something you often hear is, if it had a mother or grew in the ground, eat it. If it didn't, then it's fake food and it's full of chemicals and you shouldn't touch it. And I bought all of that hook, line, and sinker. And it really made me fear anything that wasn't, you know, supposedly clean, which happens to a lot of people. Like, this is what happens. We get taught by these gurus that these are the bad foods, the unclean foods, the sinful foods that we shouldn't touch. So we do our very, very, very best to not touch them, to the point that often we become afraid of them, right? And then what ends up happening is, because we're trying to restrict them, we end up craving them even more and ultimately binging on them and feeling out of control around them and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, overeating them and then blaming ourselves for it, because we feel like we can't control ourselves with the bad foods.
Mm. And is that what you mean when it really sent you over the edge, out of control, is by staying away from that, you just crave them even more and we're drawn to them?
Yeah. And for me, it became bulimia, full-blown bulimia. Yeah.
Right.
But in a lot of people, it doesn't go to the extreme of bulimia, but it will turn into, say, binge eating or even feeling out of control around certain foods, right? Like, how many people do you know, you've probably even said this yourself, oh, no, I can't have that food in the house because I can't control myself when it's here. I just eat it all. Well, one of the biggest reasons that happens is because we've been told it's bad and we shouldn't eat it. And so we try not to. That's what creates that pattern of feeling like we can't control ourselves with those foods.
I feel like it's a real psychological thing.
Yeah, 100% it is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, actually, not even 100%. It's partly a, you know, sort of biological, physical thing too, because in a lot of ways, you know, our body, the more we try to avoid those things, the more our bodies will crave it as well.
It's such a strange thing, because I, you know, I've had things, and I have this conversation with friends too, and it's either you've got to, people say, I won't buy it, I won't even bring it into the house, or I've had it where I've had it in the house and I think I'm going to have a good relationship with it, and then I've end up eating the whole thing because I think, I may as well just get rid of it, and I don't want to throw it out, I may as well eat it, just get rid of it, be done with it. And it's just a wild emotional thing that we have with food and all, you know, restrictions. And I don't have crazy amount of restrictions, but that has happened.
Yeah.
You know, on many occasions.
And it's precisely because you view that food as bad and like, I shouldn't have it in the house, and so I shouldn't eat it all. As soon as you feel that way, all of a sudden you want to get it out of the house as quick as possible. And you start, absolutely. Exactly like you said. And
it's a tough thing to change.
You know, like, we've been so conditioned to believe that this is normal and that this is the supposedly healthy way to live that we don't even recognize how abnormal it is to allow food to control us like that. Like, if you're scared of cookies, you're scared to have ice cream in your house, food is controlling you. You know, and we.
What about the sugar aspect of it, though? Like, there is this real drug effect. And I find the more I eat, the more I want it. And I find if I do stay away from it, the cravings don't go down. So it's almost like chain smoking or something. It's like, if I have that, it's like my body goes, yes, I'll have some more. But do you have a different perspective on that with your experience?
Yes, absolutely. So with sugar, it does impact the same part of the brain that drugs do. Like that part of that sort of story we've been told about sugar is true, but it doesn't hijack that part of the brain in the same way that drugs do. So it doesn't work exactly the same. And, you know, you said, the more that I have it, the more I feel like I want it. So I try to stay away from it, but it's truly the act of trying to stay away from it that makes you crave more of it when you do finally allow yourself to have it. And I want you to prove this, I want to do a little experiment with you here for a second. And those listening at home can try this with us. So I want you to think about a food that you typically feel like maybe you can't control yourself around, or a food that you try to avoid because you feel like you eat too much of it when you do eat it. Can you think of one?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, imagine for a moment that you ate your body weight in that all day, every day. You can have as much of that food as you want, anytime you want it. Just eat it all day long. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, just eat your body weight in it all day long.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to say something about that?
Yeah. What's the first thing that you think when I suggest that?
The word, it makes me sick, because I've kind of done it. Like, mine is chocolate covered almonds, and I'll eat them. And then I realize I actually feel sick and I'll stop eating.
Exactly.
So I couldn't even imagine
eating
it for days.
That's my point. Now try the opposite. Imagine you can never, ever, ever have them again. Imagine trying to never have them again, going the rest of your life without never having one.
I don't want to do that.
Exactly. And the longer you try to do that, the more you're going to want some, right? So allowing yourself to have as many of them as you want and listening to your body about what your body is saying when you do have as many as you want makes you feel sick. You don't want to do that. Right? But when you decide that, no, I can't have them, oh God, that sounds awful too. I don't want to do that either. So allow as much as you want, anytime you want, but we have to do it strategically. And I always say, this is how I stop binging. And it sounds crazy, but I allowed myself to binge all day, every day. Today, right now, today, I can go out today and binge as much as I want. I can binge my face off if I want to, but I simply don't want to. Because first of all, I rewired that part of my brain that had been stuck in patterns that had been caused by restriction. But also, I love and value my body enough that I don't want to treat it that way. I'm very aware now of what my body tells me about what binging does to it. So just like you said, when you stop eating, when you recognize that, oh no, I've eaten so much that I don't feel good, right? Mm-hmm. So you're listening to your body once it gets to the point that it's told you this is too much, it doesn't feel good. The key there is to practice getting ahead of that feeling and staying more present with your body, getting out of your head. Because what's probably happening is as soon as you sit down with those chocolate covered almonds, your brain starts going, I'm just going to have a couple. Right?
Such a lie.
Right? Exactly. Because the more you tell yourself, I'm just going to have a couple, the more you go, okay, just a couple more, because it's that restriction, right? But if you sit down with them, with the whole bag, and you go, and listen, and I'm about to say this, and I understand fully that I sound batshit crazy. I understand fully that it's terrifying. I get that. But it works. And that's why I don't care that I sound crazy when I say this, because it works. So if you sit down with them and you practice reminding yourself, I can eat as much of these as I want. I don't need to be afraid of them. I can eat as much as I want. Okay. So how, like, what do I want? And you stay present with your body. Like, you stay present in your body while you're eating them and pay attention to every single piece. So instead of being in your, all up in your head when you're eating them and hearing yourself going, just a couple more, just a couple more, that's just all fear, right? You're just stuck in fear. Like, no, no, I can't have this many. I need to stop. Well, I'll just have a couple more. That won't hurt. That's just, you're just stuck in your head on fear at that point. But if we cut all of that out, remind ourselves, I don't have to be afraid of them and I don't have to be afraid and try to restrict them. I can eat as many as I want. And we bring our attention back into our body so that we're present in our body and what our body is telling us about how they're making us feel. And we think about how we actually want to feel. We're able to stop much sooner. And if we allow ourselves to just simply enjoy them, again, we're able to stop much sooner because we're satisfied so much quicker, right? When we're present with them and fully enjoying every single bite, again, instead of hearing that running dialogue, fighting over how many we should eat, when we're just present, enjoying them and paying attention to how they're making us feel and recognizing when we've had enough, we don't want to eat ourselves sick anymore. Again,
it all makes sense.
It's scary as hell. And in the beginning, when you first start practicing this, like, it's not a magic fix. It doesn't work instantly. It's something that has to be practiced, right? Which,
and you said something really important there, which is presence, which we hear about this, and it's true in every part of our life. If we are actually present and conscious, we wouldn't do half of the things that we actually do.
100%.
It seems to be a lot more fun to remain unconscious because it's easier. It's more comfortable. We don't have to be accountable, all of that stuff. But as soon as you bring presence into it, and you just said, if you were present when you were actually eating, when I was actually eating the chocolate covered almonds, because it's 100% true. I actually kind of ignore the presence. I almost kind of think of it like an angel and a devil on each shoulder. Yeah. One's going, go ahead, enjoy yourself. And the other one's going, bad idea. And I decide to tune out the one that says bad idea. And so it is, you're playing this little game because I can feel myself literally going unconscious so I can do it. And often you're doing it with an activity, like if I'm watching television, where you can remain a little more unconscious. So presence has a lot to do with it. And you talk about that in your article on Tiny Buddha called How I Got Healthy and Overcame My Food Body Issues by Ignoring Conventional Advice. You talk about the path to healthy eating and living. And the first one is being present. So I think that's such an important point.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't have truly healthy eating if you are not present in your body.
And you probably can't begin to change your patterns.
You cannot begin to change your patterns either. And that's the thing too, right? Like, changing our patterns takes effort because, first of all, our patterns developed for a reason. And like the reason usually is they're serving us in some way, right?
Protecting us, maybe.
They're protecting us. They're serving us in some way. So they develop for a reason initially, and then they just keep getting repeated because we just get stuck in them. It's as simple as that, right? And you know, you made a good point about how much easier it is to be not present, to be, you know, stuck unconsciously, just kind of mindlessly going through the
motions of eating and
going through the motions. And one of the biggest reasons why we get stuck in patterns is in the first place is simply because it's easier. Like, it takes a lot of brain power and energy to be present. And if we, you know, practicing being present takes a lot more energy than just going through the motions of being mindless all day and just sort of running on those autopilot behaviors. The reason we have those autopilot behaviors is because it's easier for our brains. It takes less effort and energy for our brains if we're stuck on autopilot. But again, if our autopilot patterns are not serving us, then it's not serving us. And we really do have to put in the effort to practice being more present. Because without presence, you can't change anything.
So that's a huge takeaway.
Yeah.
As Oprah would say, tweet, tweet.
Yeah.
And speaking of tweets, let's jump into the 7 things you need to know if you are set on or considering, losing weight again, especially as a resolution. Mm. So your very first one that you had tweeted was, despite all their promises, there isn't a single method of intentional weight loss that's any more effective than any long-term. And there are 0 ways to lose weight that are actually effective long-term for the vast majority of people. And you've already addressed that to some degree. Mm. But maybe people might see, they're like, yes, I am successful at weight loss. But as you had shown earlier, you were just yo-yo dieting back and forth.
Yeah. And I think for the most part, the few people who are successful, quote, successful, use that term loosely now. I think for the most part, the few people that are supposedly successful long-term are doing exactly that. They have to stay so vigilant. They're, you have to stay obsessed with the number on the scale and obsessed with what's going into your mouth all day, every day, in if you have any hope whatsoever of trying to maintain it. It doesn't typically get maintained. You just end up gaining a few here and losing a few there. And it keeps yo-yoing. But because you're doing that yo-yo, it looks like you're maintaining it. And I mean, I lived that cycle for a decade. Nothing about any of that is healthy, mentally, emotionally, or physically. And, it sucks because here I was selling weight loss, right? This at the time was I was a personal trainer. This was my sole source of income, body transformations. And I'm beginning to learn that, wait, like this stuff doesn't last for people. Like nobody is able to keep it off. And it's,
you would have saw it firsthand.
Yeah.
As a trainer.
For recognizing that, when I was in that world, I was like, shit, I can't keep selling this. This isn't ethical for me to do that. Because the truth of the matter is when you actually look at long-term diet studies or weight loss studies, and I'm talking long-term past 2 years, most of them don't go past a year or two. Because weight loss companies know that people don't keep it off past that long. So most of them don't go past that long, but the few that do, once you get to the 2 to 5 year mark, the vast majority of people have not only regained everything that they lost, but up to 66% of them are way up to 11 pounds more than when they originally started. So the reality is intentional weight loss efforts, if you make efforts to lose weight intentionally, you are more likely to gain weight over time than if you don't. Like losing weight on a diet or in some other way intentionally is one of the single biggest predictors of future weight gain that there is.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's sickening. Yeah. It's sickening.
Number 2, you say the reason that's the case, that weight loss is one of the biggest predictors of weight gain. And you say you can't stay, and the reason you can't stay consistent has nothing to do with willpower, discipline, motivation, or your ability to be successful, and everything to do with human biology and psychology. That's why it's such a universal struggle. And I think that's quite encouraging for people who have been on this weight loss yo-yo journey.
It's not their fault. It's not their fault. One of the things that, really started to get to me when I was in that world was every single time I would get a new client, they would say, I did this diet and this diet and this diet and this diet, because everybody was in the same boat I was, dieting for 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years, And they would all say to me, I did this one and I did that one and I did that one. And they were, it worked great, but I'm so stupid, I couldn't stick to it and I gained the weight back. And once I started learning like why that's the case, it really started frustrating me because it's not your fault. First of all, anytime intentional weight loss happens, especially if it happens fast, our bodies immediately go into protective mode, because the reason we gain weight in the first place is it's a biological protective mechanism built into our species since the beginning of time. Right? When there's an excess of calories, or for whatever reason, we gain weight to protect our bodies from dying, from starvation. We gain weight. That's why weight gain happens. So when weight loss happens, especially if it's fast weight loss, our bodies go into this state of, oh my God, we're starving to death. And all kinds of different things begin to happen in your body that make your body want to regain the weight. The other thing about it, and this is just a couple of reasons, like I'm not even getting into like all of it. Tracy
Mann. No, you need to take your programs if you want to get into all of it.
Well yeah, but Tracy Mann actually has a great book, Secrets from the Eating Lab, where she gets into a lot of the science around it. It's really good. But the other reason is, like I've seen this in clients a lot. Well, first of all, our habits, right? We talked about that a little bit already, our patterns. I think that most people underestimate how deeply ingrained our habits with food are with who we are, right? The way that we eat really becomes a function of the way that we live, and our patterns become a part of who we are. And so that's another reason why it's so ridiculous to suggest that motivation and willpower is the fix to changing the way that you eat. It's not, because the way that we eat, again, becomes part of who we are. And so when you temporarily try to change your, you know, food habits in order to lose weight or in order to eat healthy or just whatever, sure, you know, maybe willpower and motivation work for a little while, but inevitably life happens and you slip back into your own old habits because you haven't done anything to change the habits long term or why the habits developed in the first place. And, you know, another thing that I see a lot in clients is, you know, this kind of falls on sort of the emotional reasons, some of the emotional reasons that weight loss doesn't last. And a lot of the time, you know, we can put on weight sort of as a protective mechanism purposefully, but unconsciously purposefully, if that makes sense, like without even realizing that we're doing it. One of my clients one time, you know, she's going through my process and she started noticing that her pants were getting tight. And I don't advertise that weight loss is a side effect of the work that I do. Because I don't want to suggest that as though it's a good thing or a benefit of this work or whatever. But sometimes that does happen just because it does with clients. And so she started noticing that this was happening in for her. And she went to the doctor, and sure enough, it was the first time she'd got on the scale in a long time. And the doctor, you know, starts congratulating her because the scale is down, which is a whole nother issue that's horrible in the first place. But anyway, the doctor's, you know, congratulating her because her scale is down or whatever. And immediately she goes home and she starts falling back into these old habits with food. And we get on the call the next week and she said, you know, I spent the whole week just eating everything I could get my hands on. And what we ended up discovering after, you know, kind of digging into what was going on, she had a history of sexual abuse in her past. And to her, being in a bigger body feels safe.
Sure.
So when the doctor is, you know, validating the fact that her body was actually shrinking, subconsciously her brain is going, oh my God, we are unsafe. And again, so this is a pattern she was stuck in. Subconsciously starts reaching for food all the time because she needs to feel safe again. And the only way that she knew to feel safe at the time was to be in a bigger body. So the actual act of weight loss terrified her to the point that she, you know, she started trying to reverse that. Again, subconsciously, she didn't realize
sure.
That's what was happening at the time. But, you know, there are so many, and there's medications, and there's just simply the fact that some people's bodies are bigger than others, and that's okay too, right? Like, there's so many different reasons why weight loss doesn't last that have nothing to do with discipline, motivation, willpower, or any of those things. And yeah, so they're, you know, biological, they're physiological, they're psychological, they're emotional. There's just so many reasons.
But as you say in your article, we have been bombarded for so long, and by companies who are, you know, creating profit to sell us these messages, and we have believed them. And just like we talked about the importance of presence, you're pointing to another great point of learning to listen to yourself. Trust yourself more than you trust the outside world.
Trust yourself,
what does your body need?
Trust yourself more than you trust the outside world. And also uncover you know, focus instead less on what is going in and more on why it's going in. Right? Like in the case of my client coming back from the doctor, the problem wasn't that she, you know, may potentially gain some of the weight back. Who cares? Whatever. She's fine. The problem was she was eating so much that she wasn't feeling good again.
Yeah.
Right. And she was.
And you realize weight loss is so complicated, and not even weight loss, just that our relationship with weight loss is complicated.
Well, because
people have traumas, people have emotional things going on.
Yeah. And people have trauma around their weight and food as a result of the messages that we've gotten about weight and food. There's
from
a lot of
everywhere.
Yeah. There's a lot of trauma just because of that alone. So it is complicated. I mean, weight loss itself is not complicated, right? Like anybody can reduce their intake and drop some weight. Like anybody can do that. It's everything that goes into what happens when weight loss occurs that's complicated. And again, the simple fact that you've lost weight in the first place, you know, it puts you at higher risk of gaining weight. Again, not that I'm saying that that's a bad thing. What I'm saying is it's really messed up that this thing that we're told is the solution is actually the problem, right? Like weight loss isn't the solution, or the way that we think about weight isn't the problem. Weight loss is actually the problem.
And which brings us to...
Sorry?
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Well, yeah, it's part of it. The way that we've been taught to think about weight and our bodies is also a big part of the problem. You know, the anti-fat bias that we've all been so conditioned with is an enormous part of the problem, because there's so, so very much shame and fear that gets associated with being in a bigger body. And rightfully so, because we live in a society that's so conditioned to, you know, spew venom.
Fat shaming and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I say that brings us to number three tweet around the seven things you need to know. You say, while there are correlations between higher weight and certain diseases, they're also correlated with living with weight stigma and inadequate healthcare.
Yeah.
There's no evidence proving that being at a higher weight actually causes any of them. And I think we have some limiting beliefs around that, or we've been sold this story of more weight equals more disease. And like you say, while the truth, there is the link, it's not in the way that we think.
Yeah.
And when I was reading that, it brought up to mind of a situation I had, just to kind of prove your point around this, because I feel like I'm over the past number of years, I've been at probably my ideal weight for, you know, where I am in life, you know, where I'm happy to be, where I naturally maintain. But I think it was about 6 years ago, and I like to juice from time to time. And at this particular time, I was going for blood work about 6 years ago, and I was juicing every single day. You know, it was a great way to get all the fruits and veggies, because I don't eat copious amounts of them normally. And so I went to my doctor to have blood work done. And when I went back to get my results, he opened up his file and he was like, holy shit. And he shocked himself. He looked at me and he goes, that deserves a holy shit. And I was like, what? Like, I didn't know if it was good, bad. What are you talking about? And he said, what do you do? And I thought, for a living? This is a stupid question. And he was like, no, for health. And I was like, I wasn't sure what he was getting at. And then I was going through all the things that I should do more of, or I didn't do. And then I came to fruits and veggies, like I should eat more fruits and veggies. And then I was like, it clicked. I was like, I juice. And then he told me my cholesterol numbers, and they were extremely low. And he looked at me like, I couldn't get these even if I gave people medication. Now, a few years after that, so maybe I think it was just actually 2 years ago, I hadn't been, I was juicing sporadically, and I was again going for blood work, but I hadn't been juicing at this point. And I got my results back, and they were much higher. But to your point, my weight had not changed.
Yeah.
So I had cholesterol changes. I was the exact same body size, but my health was not related to my weight.
Yeah.
It had to do with other things going on. And that was the first thing that popped up in my mind when I read that, because I thought, it's true, but we have biases around heavier bodies, and we think or we impose our own thoughts on people around the idea of disease or being unhealthy.
Well, and truly, because an enormous part of the reason is because every time you turn around, you are programmed to believe, in large part by the medical community themselves, who are profiting off of drug companies, who are profiting off of us believing that higher weight equals worse health. When the reality is, there's really none of those diseases that have been linked with higher weight that don't also occur in smaller weight, in smaller bodies. Like they all occur in all body sizes. And all of the,
like cholesterol.
Yeah, and exactly. And all of the conditions that have been linked with higher weights, with, you know, linked with being in a bigger body or higher weight, every single one of them can also be linked to living with weight stigma, living with an internalized anti-fat bias, and getting in inadequate healthcare. And people who live in bigger bodies are prone for getting really crappy healthcare, because typically what happens, you know, if you're in a bigger body, you go to the doctor for a ingrown toenail and he'll tell you, you got to lose weight. Well, no, like this stuff happens in smaller people too. Can we actually like acknowledge the thing that's happening to me instead of like forcing me on a diet that we all know isn't going to work? So,
and the number of women that I've heard that they have been fat shamed by doctors.
Yes.
It is unbelievable, the number of people who share stories. Like, if, yeah, it's an obvious thing. If you have weight on, they're like, oh, you got to lose weight.
Yeah.
So that it's all of that.
And all of those diseases have also been linked to living with weight stigma. Like the very thing that the doctor is doing, you know, contributing to the weight
causing
stigma,
more pain. Yeah.
It's part of the problem. So yeah, yes, there are correlations between higher weights, but I have never seen a single, not one study anywhere that proves causation, that being in a higher weight causes any of those diseases. It just simply, there's no evidence of that. It doesn't exist. And there's no, you know, it would be very difficult to prove because, again, they're all linked to so many other things as well. So it's not necessarily, you know, more unhealthy to be in a bigger body than in a smaller body. You know, you hear all the time about, you know, this guy that was just running down the street who's been a runner his whole life and he eats, quote, clean and he's, you know, perfect health and whatever else. And he just died of a heart attack. Like you hear that stuff all the time. It like things happen no matter what size body you're in. So this whole idea that I want to get healthy this year and I'm going to lose weight, it's not like weight loss is, and this is kind of comes to point four where we're about to move. Weight loss is not an evidence-based health intervention.
For all the reasons you've listed and then probably more.
Yeah. And more. Yeah. Not the least of which being, you know, the fact that it doesn't stay off anyway. So even if it were true that being in a smaller body was necessary for health, which it's not, it's never been proven. Even if it were true, weight loss still wouldn't be an evidence-based health intervention because you are more likely to gain weight if you try to lose weight.
So weight, the whole idea of weight loss is not synonymous with healthy. We know that, right? Like it's
right. And the thing is,
you lose it doesn't mean you're going to be healthy.
Well, exactly. And as a matter of fact, most of the people I know that have ever lost weight have done so because they were incredibly unhealthy. And as a matter of fact, in my particular case, gaining a couple of pounds after coming out of that world was the healthiest thing I ever did. Yes.
And we never think of that as a good thing.
No, exactly.
Because we haven't been programmed.
Only because we're not programmed to. And so, you know, it's why I started this, why I wrote this list, because so much of what we've been taught about health and weight loss is just complete and total BS that's just making drug companies richer.
So true. Number five, you say, despite what every diet or healthy eating plan would have you believe, restricting food or food groups in an effort to be smaller or healthier is not what healthy eating or living actually is. Truly eating and living healthy is driven by love and trust, not rules and fear. Can you say more about that?
Well, you know, you were talking about the chocolate-covered almonds, right? and, you know, I try not to eat too many of them because, somebody somewhere told you that sugar's bad or whatever, or because you know that when you eat too many of them, you feel sick or whatever. So you go into any time that you spend with these chocolate covered almonds, you go into that thinking, these are bad. I shouldn't have many of them.
I'm in an unhealthy relationship
with chocolate covered almonds.
I'm like, you make me sick, but I'm going to eat you anyway.
Yeah. We'll get you some couples counseling. It'll be fine. Yeah. So, but you go into your interactions with these almonds from a place of fear. If I eat too many, I'm going to be sick. If I eat too many, I'm going to be unhealthy. Therefore, I can't eat too many. That's rules and fear, right?
Yeah.
And so you get stuck.
And love and trust is driving at what? It's loving yourself, trusting yourself.
Well, trusting your body to tell you when you've had enough. Trusting yourself with them. Like in order to get to the point where the chocolate covered almonds don't scare us anymore or don't control us anymore, we really have to trust ourselves a lot to put ourselves in the position of, I can have as many of as I want. That takes an enormous amount of trust in our world. Mm-hmm. And it takes some effort to get to the point that you trust yourself enough that you can do that. But if you don't trust yourself enough with the chocolate covered almonds, you end up stuck in the rules and the fear that I just talked about, which we all know leads to just eating more of them. So you've got to trust yourself with food. You've got to trust your body. When it tells you, first of all, you've got to trust the fact that your body will tell you, right? And so many of us walk around completely disconnected from our bodies, in part because we hate them so much that we want to forget that we even have them, but also because our culture fuels disconnect. And all of the rules that we've heard around food fuels disconnect too, right? Because it's all about fighting your hunger, controlling and resisting and ignoring. And, you know, those are the messages that we get around food. And all of that programs us to disconnect from our bodies. If we're disconnected from our bodies and we're stuck in fear, we're just running those autopilot behaviors. So we've got to trust our bodies enough. We've got to reconnect with our bodies, but trust our bodies enough to know that they're talking to us all day. They're trying to tell us how our choices are making them feel. Just got to trust them enough to listen, right? And we've got to love them enough to then want to honor them when they do communicate to us what our choices are doing to them, right?
Yeah.
So when we love ourselves and our bodies enough that we genuinely want to treat them with care and with kindness, and we trust that our body will tell us what it wants, what it needs, when it's had enough, what makes it feel its best, when what doesn't, that's when truly healthy eating can thrive. Not through, I shouldn't eat them because they're bad, but they're so good. You know, like that back and forth we put in our head, that's just rules and fear. And we know where that leads. Yeah.
Number six. Weight loss goals are the worst reason in the world to start exercising. Mm-hmm. Exercise shouldn't be punishment you have to endure because you committed the imaginary sin of gaining weight or aren't living in a perfect body. And this is another one that's probably kind of like, you know, clean eating. We associate weight loss with exercising versus exercising just being something you do to move your body, you know, as part of your routine of living, you know, just to help yourself. But we associate it with, I'm going for a walk because I need to lose a few pounds.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happens. And what happens is it becomes punishment. And so not only does this whole weight loss thing destroy our relationship with food and our bodies, but it destroys our relationship with movement. Because movement becomes, exercise becomes punishment and something that we have to endure.
And it's drudgery, right? Yeah.
We don't want to do it. We got to figure out how many calories we burned when we did it. We've got to do it for so many minutes or else it doesn't count. If we start doing it and then the scale doesn't go down enough because we hate doing it so much, we quit doing it because we're not getting the quote results that we want. Like,
it's true. It's cyclical. Like this.
Yeah. It destroys our relationship with movement. And, you know, there's a bit of a movement around now. You know, a lot of people talk about engaging in joyful movement. Mm-hmm. Right? Like there are people out there trying to sort of help change this sort of societal relationship that we have with exercise. And they talk about joyful movement instead of, you know, this forced exercise routine, doing joyful movement. And I don't necessarily think that movement needs to always be joyful. I'm not fully on board with the joyful movement, but it shouldn't be punishment. It never, ever, ever should be punishment. And the reason that I say I'm not fully on board with the joyful movement, you know, we were talking about this the other night in my group. One of my clients was asking about it because she's, you know, she's been trying to get some movement, some extra movement in every day. And she said she notices how much better she feels when she does this particular thing that she's been doing, but she finds it so boring, you know. And she said, you know, I know movement should be joyful. And I went, well, not really. And I used me as an example. So the years that I spent in the fitness industry, I did a lot of damage to my body. You know, like I basically destroyed my body doing everything I was told I was supposed to do to be healthy. Mm. And as a result, I have a lot of lingering muscle imbalances and old injuries that never healed right. And so if I don't take care of my body every day in certain ways, I live in a lot of pain. Luckily, I've learned over the last number of years the movements that help my body feel the best to not be in so much pain, right? And, you know, I used to judge my body for the pain it would be in. Like I started running and my knees would start to get sore and I'd hate my body because my knees were sore, or I'd think that my body hated me because my knees were sore. Now I recognize, no, that was my body trying to tell me you're doing too much. Hmm. Right? It was like my engine light being on and I was ignoring
it. And you're ignoring it and put a piece of tape over it?
Exactly. Literally, I would put tape over it and go run again, right?
Yeah.
And
so, not the epitome of not listening.
Exactly.
Not honoring.
Exactly. Yeah. And exactly. And so, you know, it got to the point where I couldn't train at all anymore because the injuries were so bad. And so now there, like I said, there are certain things that I need to do every day in order to be in a body that doesn't feel painful. I don't like to do any of them. it's stretching / yoga. And this is not a popular opinion, I hate yoga. And I say that not like as a professional saying yoga is terrible, but because I recognize there are a lot of really wonderful benefits to yoga. I mean, as an individual, me personally, I'm short. I am not bendy. I hate stretching and yoga. I would rather deadlift double my body weight for an hour than do 5 minutes of yoga. So to me, there's absolutely nothing joyful about it, but I recognize that it helps my body feel better. If I don't do it enough, my body starts talking to me and telling me this is what I need. And it does so through pain. My neck starts to hurt. My shoulders start to hurt. And then I go, oh, yeah, shoot. Sorry, body. I didn't do any of that yesterday, did I? Or I haven't done it yet this morning. Okay, let's do some. So despite the fact that I don't really like it, I love my body enough and I love not being in pain enough that I'll sit down and I'll do some of it so that I can feel better. So exercise shouldn't be punishment, but I also don't necessarily think movement always needs to be joyful. I think if you're approaching it from a place, again, of love and trust, then it just works itself out on its own, right? If you're just loving and trusting your body to tell you what it needs, what movement it needs, then it's just going to work itself out on its own. Some days, you know, I just feel like doing a little bit of a jog. I can't do much anymore because I damaged my knees so bad. But sometimes, you know, you get a little bit of nervous energy and you just want to get the blood pumping a little more, you know, like
run it out. Yeah.
Right.
A little sprint.
Yeah. Your body tells you, yeah. but weight loss is the worst reason to start trying to move more. The worst reason, because you're never going to keep it up.
And you said in your Tiny Buddha article that once you stop suffering, you turn your back on it all those horrible messages. Yeah. And one of the things you did was stop exercising every day and you replaced it with some light, mindful walking mm-hmm. and mobility work instead. So that was you like totally checking in with your body and tuning out that outside world and paying attention to Ronnie.
Yeah. Forget what I think I should be doing to, quote, be healthy or to get enough steps in or to, you know, hit my weight loss targets or to change what my body looks like. Screw all of that. what does my body need today? What is it telling me that it needs? How does it feel? How do I want it to feel? And what can I do to bridge that gap? And turns out
and numbers,
a lot of mindful walking and God help me, yoga.
Because you do a lot of walking. You do daily walks.
Every single day. And now that we've got the new puppy around, it's twice a day.
Yeah. How nice is that? Yeah. Yeah. You have a reason to get out too. Puppies like walks. Mm-hmm. Number seven, you talk about lifestyle changes of the word. So I think that's right up there with another word like clean eating that we have connotations. It has connotations. Lifestyle changes, you say, are one of the biggest lies we've been sold and aren't typically any more effective than diets. Mm-hmm. So if you're not already consistently making choices that support your health and well-being, it's not your lifestyle that you need to change.
Right.
So lifestyle, is that just another word for diet?
Well, it really has been. You know, as the weight loss industry has clued into the fact that people are cluing into the fact that diets don't work, they've really had to rebrand and get sneaky about rebranding. So a lot of the time you'll hear, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle. Or it's not a diet, it's just healthy eating. Or it's not a diet, it's just eating for my goals, right? These are all things I said when I was in that world too, because I again, bought it hook, line, and sinker at the time. But the reality is, if somebody else is telling you what, quote, lifestyle changes you should be making, if somebody else is coming and telling you these are all the things you should be doing every day to take care of yourself and your body, it's not going to be, the result is not going to be any different than a diet. It's you, it's always you trying to force yourself to do what somebody else says you need in order to create some future result, to create some result at a later date that's usually based in fear and scarcity.
And basically saying how you are right now is not good enough.
Exactly.
Which is complete crapola.
Exactly. The truth of the matter is our lifestyles are the result of our day-to-day choices. That's what creates our lifestyle, the choices we make every day. And the choices that we make every day are the results of the things going on in us, right? What drives our choices? Yeah. Our thoughts, our emotions, our beliefs, beliefs about ourselves, about our lives, about our bodies, right? About life in general, and our hardwired patterns of behavior. Those are the things that are driving the choices that we make every day. So if we want the choices that we make every day to change, then those are the things that we have to focus on changing. The problem is, those are the things that we flat out ignore when we try to force ourselves to make all of these lifestyle changes that we're always told we're supposed to make. And that's one of the biggest reasons that they don't stick for people, because it's just about willpowering and resisting our way into trying to do something someone else says we should do, instead of focusing on, okay, so how do I want to feel? How do I want to be in my life? How do I want to be in my body? How do I want to feel in my body? And what's keeping me from already feeling that way or doing the things that I need to do in order to feel that way? Well, my day-to-day choices. And what causes my day-to-day choices? Thoughts, emotions, beliefs, patterns of behavior. So those are the things and we need to focus on fixing, or not fixing, but changing, if what we're doing isn't working for us.
It's back to that presence, that checking in,
yeah,
constantly returning home. And that's what I like when you talk about the path to healthy eating and living in your Tiny Buddha article, which I encourage people to go and get. And in fact, you probably can search Ronnie Davis and get all the things that you've written there.
Yeah.
But the very first one you talk about, the path to healthy eating, is being present, which we've talked about. Mm-hmm. You say connect it to your inner world, which we've talked about as well. You know, your thoughts and your feelings and the communication from your body, you say. Also curious. I love curiosity. Mm. About your inner experiences in this moment with gentle awareness, self-compassion, and non-judgment.
Yeah.
If we could all get there. Mm-hmm. And you say also with intention. Intentional with your thoughts and behaviors and responses. Intentionality, choosing from kindness, love, and gratitude. Intentionally, I like that, in choosing from this nice little pool of loveliness, kindness, gratitude, and love. Mm-hmm. Choosing from that versus choosing those other thoughts.
Yeah, because we're so conditioned to make choices for our bodies from fear and scarcity, like I said, right? Fear, distrust, scarcity. Not good enough as I am, not fit enough, not lean enough, not healthy enough, not whatever. It's all just fear and scarcity. And that's what we're programmed to think we're supposed to be choosing from. So I have to try to make a choice today that will fix those problems. No, no. I can just be present, right? I can be present in this moment and in my body, and I can be connected to what's going on and curious about what's going on. And then I can be intentional about my response. I can be intentional about the choices I make, intentionally choosing instead from kindness, gratitude, love, compassion, all of those wonderful things. Because if you're intentionally making a choice for yourself from a place of love and kindness, how can you possibly go wrong? So let me give you an example of this. An example of what I mean when I talk about, you know, the way we've been conditioned to think about food and sort of making this little bit of a shift here. So recently I made some chicken soup. Last week, I think it was. I made a big pot of chicken soup. And I, you know, homemade chicken stock, chicken, potatoes, vegetables. That's pretty much all that was in it. And for the most part, we associate all of those things with being healthy foods. I mean, depending on what, quote, diet you're trying to follow, any one of those things that I just listed could be unhealthy, depending on who you're talking to. Yes. But generally yes. speaking, those are some fairly, you know, quote, clean, healthy foods, right? I got violently sick. Now, to be clear, I didn't make it because, you know, I thought it was healthy. I just like chicken soup, right? Like, I like chicken soup, so I made chicken soup. I got violently sick from that soup. And again, these are foods that we associate for the most part with being fairly healthy. My body had such a violent reaction. I thought I was going to have to go to urgent care. Like, it was bad, and it was bad for days. And so what did I do the next day? The only thing that I could do, I ate what I knew makes my stomach feel better when it's upset. I lived on toast, and I had potato chips for supper. Potato chips, plain potato chips, for my entire life, make my stomach feel better when it's upset. They always have. So in that particular moment, the kindest choice I could make for myself was to just give myself a little bowl of potato chips, because I knew that that in that moment was what was going to help me feel my best. Now, does that mean living on potato chips all day, every day is going to help my body feel my best? Not at all. I'm not saying that. I'm not suggesting that that's what we should be doing. What I'm saying is, when we're present and we're connected and we're aware of what's going on within us, and then we're intentional about making choices that help us feel better. If I was trying to be good with food, I would have kept eating the soup. And I would have kept trying, and would have kept having that reaction that I was having, right? Because the soup supposedly is way better than potato chips if we're following the rules. But in that particular instance, for that particular meal, that's what I mean about presence. How do I feel right this second? And right this second, based on how I feel, what's the best choice that I can make for myself? What's the kindest choice that I can make for myself? And if in that moment, the only thing that's going to settle my stomach are a few plain potato chips, that's the kindest choice I can make for myself.
And to your point, the dieter Ronnie from decades ago would never have allowed herself to eat potato chips. Mm-hmm. But the Ronnie who is present and connected and curious will allow herself to do that because it makes her feel good.
She allowed herself to do it because it helped her feel better, 100%. Mm. And she can, because she doesn't restrict them anymore, she can eat a couple and feel better and then be done with them. But when she was trying to restrict them before, like dieter Ronnie, clean eating Ronnie that wasn't allowed potato chips, would try to restrict them and restrict them and restrict them, probably would have kept eating the soup and getting sick and then would have eventually binged on the potato chips because she had been trying to restrict them for so long. Mm. See, that's the difference.
Big difference.
And the key to all of this, the other key, the really big piece to all of this is coming at it all from a place of loving ourselves fully, right? I talk about this, I call it wholehearted being.
Yeah.
Because to me, being wholehearted and you know, I kind of borrowed this a little bit from Brené Brown, where she talks about being, it's about being rooted firmly in our own self-love and our own worthiness, knowing that we love and value ourselves enough that we want to treat ourselves and our bodies well. We want to treat ourselves. We have to want to treat our bodies with kindness in the first place. Because if you don't want it, if you don't love and value yourself enough, when you ask yourself, how is it going to make me feel if I eat that thing? And you recognize that it's going to make me feel like crap if I eat that thing, you don't care. You're going to eat it anyway, because you don't care. You don't believe you deserve to feel good, so you don't care. So it has to start from a foundation that's firmly rooted in our own love, trust, and feelings of worthiness, because the way that we feel about ourselves impacts every aspect of our lives, including the way that we treat ourselves and our bodies. And then from there, we have to practice living from presence, connection, curiosity, and intention, as I talk about. And the reason that this is so powerful, and I fully believe it really truly is the new path to eating or living healthy in the extent to which we can, is because it does two really powerful things that are required for lasting change. First, it helps you learn to love, trust, and value yourself enough to want to treat yourself and your body kindly and with care, as I talked about. And the other thing is, especially the presence and the curiosity part, it allows you to put space between your triggers and those conditioned autopilot patterns of behavior that we talked about, the patterns of behavior that drive, quote, unhealthy choices in the first place. It helps you get to know yourself and your patterns. It helps you get to know your needs, your moment-to-moment needs, so that you can't even determine in the first place what you need, right? If you're trying to follow a plan, you're running somebody else's agenda. You're not connected to what you actually need in that moment. This helps you get to figure out your own needs in the moment, and it helps you learn new tools and practices that better support overall well-being, so that you're not just trying to force your body to change or take care of your physical needs, but you're learning to understand and nurture mental, emotional, and physical needs. And that's really important, because our mental and emotional health has an enormous impact on our physical health as well. Those are all major components of our overall well-being. And our mental and emotional states drive our choices in the ways that I already talked about. So yeah, it's a powerful process, but it's not at all easy.
No, it definitely takes, well, anytime you're reconnecting to yourself, it's a journey. It's a journey. It's a journey of healing. It's a journey of, it's a return to self.
It's a practice.
It's a practice. It's a beautiful one. But it does take effort, but it's a worthy journey.
Well, it's definitely a worthy journey, and it's a necessary journey, you know, because I know you've done this a lot in your work too, right? You know, really practicing being more present and in your body, and it's necessary. Like if you're stuck in your head all day, you know, like you said already, you're just going through the motions, and all you're doing is just repeating these patterns of behavior that, you know, may have developed for one reason, but just don't serve you anymore. And again, you're disconnected from yourself and your body. And if you're disconnected from yourself and your body, and you're stuck in all of that fear, you have no ability to recognize what you actually need in any given moment, or what's causing you to feel the way that you feel in any given moment. Right?
So true.
Yeah.
I could talk to you all day about this, because you're a wealth of information. And what is the best way for people to connect with you? Because you have like I said, if you go to Tiny Buddha, you could see all sorts of things that you've written, but you have a website as well, ronniedavis.com. Is that right?
Or, well, that's,
you have
my your personal website. I don't usually use that too much anymore. ECET, www.ecet.online. is my main website. And there, there's lots of free resources and stuff that people can, you know, check out and take advantage of that can.
And you have a podcast too.
Yes. And I have my podcast.
That people can go and listen to. Yeah. Yep. What's the name of that?
That's Being More. Being More.
Yeah. So that's a great way if you're driving in the car and you want to listen to all of Ronnie's great advice. I like our conversation because it's really is around the whole person. Like you said, wholehearted being versus always the doing.
Yeah.
Inside versus the outside,
yeah.
You know, conscious versus unconscious. So I've really enjoyed everything we've talked about today. And I appreciate you coming back to chat with me again. And of course, if you're curious, on episode 103, Ronnie goes into detail about her weight loss journey, her dieting journey, mm-hmm. and why that had all started. And also we have an episode that we've done together on episode 148 called Get Out of Your Own Way. We did a webinar last year, so there's a lot of great information on there as well. Well, thank you, Ronnie, for joining me in conversation today. As again, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. I always love getting a chance to sit and chat with you, Dana.
That was such a great conversation. If you loved it too, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Please go to iTunes to rate and review this podcast. And if you want to continue the conversation, connect with Soul Sister Conversations on the Facebook and Instagram pages. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook at Dana Lloyd Leadership, on Twitter at Coach Dana_Lloyd, and of course on LinkedIn. See you next week.